Welcome back to Card Knock Life. I'm Corey. He's Daryl.
That's good.
And we are going to talk about almonds, and we are going to talk about cats today. We did take last week off. It got a little busy last week, and that was because I had last Monday off, and we were running some errands last week, and I was like, oh shit, it's 4 o'clock. This is when we usually record, and I texted Daryl and I said, oh man, I totally forgot it's Monday. And so then we tried to reschedule, and it just never came. So the problem with that is we were going to talk about Gideon last week, but I think everyone's over Gideon. So we can maybe talk about Gideon a little bit this week, but there's just so much other stuff to talk about now.
I don't like Gideon. I think it's a bad card. I don't want to play with it.
You don't want to talk about Gideon. All right. Well, let's just skip it. Y'all know what Gideon does. You know he's awesome, yeah. Except for Daryl. But
I don't know. I have no clue that he's awesome. I'm not excited by that card at all.
But maybe you did or did not go to the pre-release this week, and that's the first thing I'd like to start with. I did go to the pre-release. It's been a while since I've gone to a pre-release. I certainly didn't go to the midnight one because I can't stay up that late anymore, but I did go to a Sunday afternoon two-headed giant pre-release, and I have to say this limited environment is pretty sweet. I was thinking back to like the Theros limited with the gods in it, where there were some really degenerate situations where your opponent had a god and there were just not enough ways to remove it from the game or deal with it. And you just get totally beaten down by the god. But there are lots of ways to do it in this set because there are lots of, like, -1/-1 counter interactions. And there's just lots of good removal in this set.
Awesome.
My friend John and I played Two-Headed Giant. And we happened to draw, like, almost the same damn pool. It was insane. Like, as far as rares go, we had the same rares. So we both had the green-white split card, which was, like, Prepare to Fight. We both had the stupid Worm Harvest or Sandworm Convergence. That's what it was called. We had two of those in our pool. We both had, what else do we have? We both had the green-white dual land.
So you guys had like two really good decks or just one?
We had one really good deck and one deck that was a bunch of commons and uncommons.
Oh, okay. I was like, did you have two really good decks, two of the exact same deck? Like, what did you?
These cards that I'm listing off are mediocre at best.
And oh, okay.
But then I did have the green god in the deck, and I had Serpapard, the green cat. So it was decent. It was decent. So we did
green
okay.
God is real good.
We went 3-1 on the day, and I have to say, no matter what, it was a really fun time. And like I said, the environment's great. There's a lot of fun stuff going on in this set. Lots of cool stuff. It seems like green is like the color to be in. The creatures like have really minimal drawbacks for some really like undercosted creatures, and like in a lot of cases the drawbacks are like put -1/-1 counters on some of your other creatures, and so like you get like
sure.
like two for a 4/4 creature, and then you have to kill like one of your like
one
that you just play as pay one for a 0/3 in a lot of cases, so you don't really mind seeing it go, but.
It doesn't hurt at all. No.
It doesn't hurt. Yeah. But anyways, the green god is insane. Ronos, the Indomitable. 2 and a green for a 5/5 Death Touch Indestructible. Can attack or block unless you control another creature with power 4 or greater. And then don't worry, because he can make all of your creatures power 4 or greater quite easily, because he's got 2 and a green to make another target creature +2/+0 and give it trample until end of turn.
Jesus. So, like, this guy's ability on himself is absurd. Because, like, it makes blocking him a complete nightmare.
Another target creature. So you can't target himself.
Oh, you can't target him?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was about to say, like, you target him with the ability, and he's a 7-power Death Touch Trample.
Yeah.
So, like, there's no way you have a good block because it's indestructible. Oh boy. That would give me nightmares. So I'm so glad they got that part right.
Yeah, well... It's worth noting that I think this guy has potential to see play in Modern, with the exception of being a really good like Path to Exile target, because he's also a creature and gets exiled. But he can be played off Collected Company. And
he's a 3-mana card?
He's 3 mana for a 5/5 creature.
Jesus.
And he's a really great mana sink for those decks, too. So, like, if you've got a bunch of Birds of Paradise, like, as an alternative to, like, having a Gavinny Township out, you could just sink a bunch of mana into, like, give a creature, like, +6/+0 and trample and, like, just beat down that way. That can really speed up the clock.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to get a copy of this for my Xenagos EDH because things that give my big dumb idiots trample. And then make my guys into big dumb idiots so that I can attack with my 5/5 Death Touch. That seems pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have little doubt that this guy's going to be all over Standard.
Scourge going to be insane.
There's so much that turns him on in Standard.
Glorybringer? It's a 4-4, but you can pump it and make it a 6-4 and then smash them for 11. Like, that seems real good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, he's very cool. I will say that at the events, we only got to play him in the last round. So, going into the fourth round, I was like, man, if I don't get to play my Runos, I'm going home. But we're going home anyway. It was the last round.
Yeah, so you're going home anyway.
But it was beautiful to just, like, turn three, got him out, and then just from that point on, just, like, went to Smash Town.
Is it safe to say that you won that game?
Yes, it is. But someone won a game with Approach to the Second Sun, so you'd be proud of them, Daryl. They played Approach to the Second Sun, the partner milled them for 5, and then they drew it and cast it again the next turn.
Yeah! Hero! Yes!
And what else? We got Cryptic Commanded at one point in the game.
Oh, that was fun. Oh, boy.
That was the only one of the invocations. Yeah, that was the only invocation that we saw.
Oh, man.
It was, like, the best one.
Like, tap your
command invocation was, like, $80.
Like, tap your guys and draw a card?
No. It was like a game that we won already, but they were like, hey, we just want to play this to show you that we have it.
Okay.
But yeah, some of these cards are nuts, man. Let's see. What were some of our all-stars that... Like, I think this Prepare to Fight has some potential in Standard. It feels kind of like a surprise, sort of a la Dromoka's Command. That's the 1 and a white for an instant speed. Untapped target creature gets +2/+2 and gains lifelink until end of turn. Like, that on its own does a lot. Untap, +2/+2, and lifelink. That's 3 functions. That's utility.
What's the fight? What's the fight cost?
Is exactly what you think it is. It's fight. It's 3 and a green for a sorcery. Target creature you control.
So many creature. That's so many, though.
It's so what?
So many. Like, many. If it was, like, 1 and a white and then 1 and a green.
Oh, like, yeah. It's mana intensive for sure.
Yeah, like, if it was 1 and a white and then 1 and a green, then you could have the guy that you pumped fight and gain you more life, which would be amazing.
Yeah.
And then it would be, like, a 3-for-1 or something like that.
Yeah, man. I mean, the only thing it's really missing is trample, right? Like, if it had trample, like, that's a lot to ask. I get it. It's not going to have trample. But the prepare has a lot of stuff on it, you know? It's got a lot of stuff that makes it
I'm not asking for trample. Like, what I'm asking for is, like, so, like, this is a really good defensive card for a green-white deck.
Yeah.
Because, like, your opponent, like, piles in with a bunch of little guys. And you're like, all right, untap my, like, Prowling Step Apart or whatever random larger creature you have in play. Block with my 6-5. Kill one of your guys. Fight, have my 6-5 fight your other guy. So you kill 2 of their guys and you gain 12 life. You know, like, that's a huge swing against a creature deck. That's why I'm saying, like, if fight was like 1 and a green, which is what that is, like, costed at normally.
Yeah.
I think it would for sure be a standard all-star.
Oh, it would be. That would be too cheap.
You think it'd be too cheap?
Too cheap. I think 6 mana is playable. It seems like a lot, but that's how these aftermath spells go, right? Like, the spell is the first side, and then the aftermath side is, like, just an added bonus that you may or may not get to. It's, like, probably about as useful as the awaken cards. Like, how often did you actually awaken spells, you know?
Yeah, never. That's a good call.
But the fact, like, fight, though, has, like, it's something that you're gonna do, you know? Like,
for 4
mana, that's a lot to ask, but you're gonna do it. It's a removal spell. Right? Like, you're going to need that sometime.
And sure.
It's worth giving up an entire turn for it.
Sure. I suppose that's the case. Like, I was just like, I felt like the card would be playable if fight was cheaper, but I thought as is, it wasn't playable.
Put it this way. You got a Verdurous Gearhulk on the table. Turn 5. Turn 6. Sure. This is right on curve. You prepare to fight the Verdurous Gearhulk. That's 10 life. And then you attack. That's another 10 life that you're going to gain. That's a 20-point life swing.
That's pretty good. All right. I can get behind that.
And you're killing a creature and dealing 10 damage. You know?
I mean,
that's a
40-point
life swing.
30, but yeah.
Or 30, yeah, 30. Sure.
Math is hard.
All right, I can get behind that.
I can get behind that.
Okay. Let's see here. What else? We did get a couple of those blue aftermath spells. I wasn't too excited about them. In fact, I saw them thinking, oh my God, these are garbage. But then I listened to this, I listened to the Top Level podcast, and Patrick Chapin was just going bonkers about Commit to Memory. And I want to see if you have the same feeling about that. 3 and a blue, Put target spell or non-land permanent into its owner's library second from top. Instant speed. Okay, once again, the card is in the first half, right? And then the second half is just something that you might do, right?
Yeah.
This is highly overcosted Time Twister. Four blue-blue for the aftermath.
It's Time Spiral that doesn't untap your lands.
Okay, so the same cost as Time Spiral, but it's the same function as Time Twister, right?
Well, Time Spiral also does that. Time Spiral is four blue-blue, untap, each player shuffles their hand graveyard library together, draw seven, exile Time Twister, untap six lands. So it doesn't have the untap six lands part. So it's not completely blessed.
Right, right. That is my favorite card to play in EDH, by the way.
Time Spiral?
Yeah.
Yeah, card is blessed.
So commit, and I think he's got a point to make here. He said this a lot of things that, basically what he was saying was this does a lot of things that blue can't usually do. Right? It deals with permanents
Beats a permanent and then, like, refills your hand. So, like, refilling your hand against, like, an aggro or mid-range deck when you both have a bunch of mana on the table and, like, they get first crack at their good cards is kind of suspect. But, like, it does give you the opportunity to, like, break up the Saheeli combo or something like that. And then, like, if, you know, you're concerned, you can spiral and hope they don't draw it. You know, but it does give you some functionality. It also might be a thing where you could get, like, a combo deck going in standard. So, like, you have Aetherflux Reservoir and Paradox Engine and this. Like, if there's some decent mana rocks, we could have something brewing here, you know? Like, I could see us going somewhere. You could use the one blue-green enchantment as a way to get mana and power your combo engine. Like, there's something there. And then if you have a bunch of cheap things that are fueling your combo, you know, there is also the paradoxical outcome. So, like, there's something here if you can put all the pieces together to kill them with Aetherflux Reservoir. Yeah. I don't know what those pieces are, and I don't know the right way to do it, but there's something here.
Not to mention, Commit is a fine target for Torrential Gearhulk.
Oh, yeah.
And Instant. Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, you can't commit and cast Memory, but, like, damn you, split card change.
Yeah.
But that was clearly why the split card change was made, because, you know, being able to cast Torrential Gearhulk and Time Spiral at the end of your opponent's turn, pretty busted.
Yes, indeed.
So
I don't know. I don't necessarily want to go into a bunch of spoilers this week other than just the ones that I mentioned. After seeing some of them get played, your opinion sort of changes on them, you know, once you see them in action. And I think that my eyes were opened a little bit to the power of some of these Aftermath spells. There's so much utility in these. I love seeing gold cards. I love seeing split cards and gold split cards. Like,
you fan of the gold split cards, really?
Very exciting. What's that?
Gold split cards up your alley. I never would have guessed. I figured I was a bigger fan of the gold split card.
Yeah.
You know, I built the cryptic the Glittering Witch deck and played it for like 6 months trying to play gold split cards and stuff like that.
You still have that deck? That you got a lot of new potential with that one.
I mean, it's bad.
I saw.
It's not good against Death Shadow. I'll tell you that much.
I've seen a lot of people brewing with Nissa Steward of Elements. I think that you might want to tap into
some Nissa
Steward of Elements here.
Pretty good.
It is really cool.
So, like, the control deck I had just doesn't have permanence.
Oh, sure.
So
now that top is banned. Maybe Nissa Story of Elements will be the new top.
Why?
In modern, so here's the MTG Goldfish. Modern Miracles is Nissa in counterbalance.
That was just the literal worst transition I've ever seen.
No, that was good. That was good. All right, let's talk about the bannings.
It was pretty terrible. All right, I'm gonna take over because usually I'm the guy that does all
legacy guy.
The legacy vintage heavy lifting.
Yeah.
This is really disappointing for me. Like, lots of disappointing.
Really? For you?
Yeah, it was.
Oh.
I've made a bunch of money playing since it's Mining Top, and it's like my Miracle's like my favorite deck ever. So like this is super really? Disappointing.
I thought it was the I thought you were bummed about Miracles being so ubiquitous in the format. I thought you were all about like playing other decks.
I like Counterbalance top. Like if you ban Terminus, I would be fine with it. Okay. Like right. But Counterbalance top is my bread and butter. I'm a huge fan of playing like four color Counterbalance with Tarmogoyfs and stuff like that. And so to just ban four cards by banning one is really frustrating to me.
So you think that they shot the wrong card?
I do.
Okay.
Because you not only did you ban an important piece from multiple other decks that like helped keep the decks moving forward, like Doomsday, Storm used it as an anti-discard protection, you know, Nykfit.
Nykfit.
Yeah, got hammered by this card getting crushed. So, like, because of that, like, I mean, I think you're doing enough damage to other decks that I think you should have gotten rid of Terminus. And, like, Joel Asset did a tweet about it that, you know, his initial thoughts on the top banning were Deathrite should have gone with it. Elves and lands gain the most. Abrupt Decay is weaker, therefore Green-Black is weaker. Main deck Blood Moon is much stronger, and Terminus should have been banned instead.
Huh.
Yeah. So, like, Miracles, like, four-color Counterbalance was a deck, but it wasn't, like, super busted and oppressive because, like, if you got behind on board, you had to cobble together a bunch of Swords to Plowshares or, like, Fire Spout or Supreme Verdict or Wrath of God at the time because Supreme Verdict wasn't a printed magic card or Moat, like these four mana spells that are really hard to cast.
Yeah.
You had to get those together in the face of Wasteland with your four-color deck. So it wasn't easy. But, like, if you fell behind, you could lose the game. Sure, you could, like, flock them out of cantrips, but, like, if they put, like, a Delver and Tarmogoyf in play, and you're trying to cast Fire Spout, you're not going to kill Tarmogoyf, so you have to draw a Plow. But, like, if you Plow the Goyf, you still have to beat the Delver, so it's like you have to draw both of these cards, and they have to resolve. Wow. So, like, you know, four-color Counterbalance was weak if it got behind on board. So, yeah. Like, to ban a completely functional Softlock engine, which, you know, people don't like Softlock, draw goes boring, to Sensei's top is boring. Okay, sure. If those are your opinions, that's fine. But, like, Legacy is a format where all the best cards get to play. So, like, let them play. Ban the card that, like, pushed the deck over the top, which was Terminus, and move on with your day. But they didn't do that. They banned Sensei's Divine Top and Legacy, and I'll go ahead and read that announcement. With Pro Tour Amakin on the horizon, R&D bet to discuss multiple formats, including Standard. But first, let's address the changes. In Legacy, Miracles, a deck focused on combining Counterbalance and Sensei's Divining Top to control what opponents can, or mostly cannot resolve, has been the best deck in the format for some time. We were hopeful that this would change over time, but it has not. That alone is not necessarily enough to move to ban a card from the deck. But Sensei's Divining Top comes with its own host of issues that center around the timely conclusion of matches in a tournament setting. The necessity of repeated top activations to play the card slows down the match play and leads to tournament delays. Coupled with the power of the Miracles deck, this is reason enough for us to take action on top. Therefore, Sensei's Divining Top is banned in Legacy.
Why not just banning Counterbalance?
So that's also a legitimate function. So there's four cards from Miracles that you ban if you're going to ban one. There's top, Counterbalance, or one of the Miracles. Entreat or Thermos. So Entreat's one of, maybe a two of if you're ambitious, and it's kind of unwieldy to cast. It just ends games, and you can cast it on your opponent's end step with top or Brainstorm. So like that's really powerful, but it's not like, it doesn't push the deck over the top. Because there have been Miracle decks, not playing Entreat for a while, not a big deal.
Yeah.
So you're looking at top, Terminus, and Counterbalance. Counterbalance is the offender that causes the most top activations, because you have to top in response to every spell and rearrange stuff to counter spells. And if you don't find one with top, you might shuffle, which makes you top again and makes you do the thing and shuffle. And so like Counterbalance is the reason for all the top shuffling a lot. You know, oftentimes if you've got like a one or two on top and your opponent doesn't play anything important, you'll just spin and take the third card and move on just because you've got them in a lock position. You just have to find a win condition, but you've locked out most of the spells in Legacy, so you don't care. Mm-hmm. So Counterbalance is sort of the offender for most of your top spins. Like still trying to filter top on your turn and things like that is annoying and is kind of egregious, but it's not as bad as Counterbalance. So like I could get behind a Counterbalance ban, but then you like by banning Counterbalance, you let decks like Storm and all of your various combo decks run rampant because there's now nothing that they have to fear or to check them. They're just like, you know, they have to beat Force of Will. So they have like a duress, or like a duress and a cabal therapy, or like a taxing probe and a cabal therapy, and they can figure out what's going on, and they never have to fear anything coming from the top of your deck, because they can take your brainstorm, or they can take your Force of Will, and they never have to fear like counterbalance randomly permeating their, countering their spells. So they just have to beat whatever hate pieces you can put in play, and then they check your hand and kill you. So like those decks kind of go unchecked counterbalance out of the mix. Turtles kind of moved those four color counterbalance decks into having a one mana instant speed Wrath of God. That's a little too much. Like you can just beat decks like Belcher, 16 goblins on turn one. You can just be like, oh, end of turn brainstorm, put a Terminus on top, cast Terminus, and like your Belcher opponent expended all their resources, and then you used one card to counter their entire hand.
Good, screw them.
Sure, okay, but that, I mean, that's a little egregious, to be fair. No. So, like, that's kind of bad.
Don't play that deck, then.
Well, I mean, this is the kind of stuff...
I know.
You know, but, like, one mana instant speed Wrath of God also made it very hard for Delver just to, like... Delver's still a deck, it survives, but, like, you know, it's harder for Delver to, like, look at your mana base and, like, understand that they can, like, keep, like, wasteland you once and then, like, knock you off of Wrath of God... And so that there's like that kind of expertise in, well, I can play my Wastelands and Stifles in a certain way and overextend because I've got these Wastelands and Stifles to protect me from Wrath of God. And so I can beat their sword.
I'll take that. It's easier for me to chew that a fair deck, quote unquote, a fair deck is stifled by counterbalance or by Terminus, I should say.
Fair creature decks, yeah.
Fair creature based deck. But like, if the argument is that like a really miserable matchup is pushed out of the format because of, you know, a certain card, then it's like, okay, sure. I'm not really
Death and Taxes can utilize Wasteland Import to Anthalia to mess up your Wrath of Gods. But with Terminus, like, you couldn't overextend and manipulate your opponent's resources in such a way with Port and Wasteland and Thalia that they couldn't cast Wrath of God. So because you used your cards correctly, you weren't being rewarded for being able to kill your opponent faster. Because they still had the miracle Terminus to just blow up your entire board, so you had to sandbag and give them a couple extra turns to draw out of it. Mm-hmm. So it lets people use their resources a little more aggressively. Which I think is fine. So, like, Terminus, I think, is the problem card that needed to be banned. And instead they took top because of time concerns, but time isn't really a concern because we're not showing these matches on coverage. There's one Legacy GP or maybe it gets covered. So, like, coverage isn't an issue, which is top's a visible coverage card. So, I mean, I'm not a fan of... I think that something needs to be banned in Miracles.
Well, you know, it's tough when a card is an artifact, and it's hard for me to say, because like I said, I have limited experience in Legacy, but it feels like everyone should be playing a certain card when it's an artifact, and it just does something that, like, every deck wants access to, right? Like, even a couple of copies, like...
So you say that, but not every deck was playing top.
Okay, all right, so that may be true, but is that based on a lack of space in the deck, or is that just based on, like, decks just legitimately do not want that function?
So, like, every deck wants that function? Sure. I would agree that every deck would like to rearrange the top cards of their library, but the structure of decks and the cards that play out the way they play out, their redundancy or what they're designed to do, make top an irrelevant magic card. So, like, if you look at three decks that would want that ability that don't have it, first one being Death and Taxes. Death and Taxes would love to make sure it never draws lands that it doesn't want. But, like, A, you're playing Phyrexian Invoker to hit your opponent's tops so that they can't Terminus you on their turn.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, B, you're playing all these white hate rares. You're casting spells, and you're activating Aether Vial, and you're activating Rashad and Port, and you're activating Wasteland. So you're tying up all your mana doing these things. You don't particularly have extra mana laying around to spend top with. You're activating Stoneforge, you're equipping creatures. Like, you don't have the mana. So, like, and honestly, if Death and Taxes could play a 61st, 62nd, 63rd card, they would just rather other play tutor targets for Recruiter of the Guard, or just good hate bears instead of casting Sensei's Divine Top. So, like, lands. Lands doesn't want to play Sensei's Divine Top. It wants to play more utility lands or more powerful spells that interact with lands. Like, you know, after they max out a Confrontation, they'd want to play a couple extra mana bonds, or maybe mainboard spheres or chalices. Like, they're not going to be card. Like, lands, like, Sensei's Divine Top is good in lands, because then you can spin, determine if you want to dredge, and then dredge if your cards are bad, and then spin again, because, you know, your lands deck is going to have extra mana. Like, but it just doesn't fit the rest of the strategy of lands, which is, you know, I'm using my mana to wasteland to port. You know, I'm using my mana to activate Thespian Stage and make ports or wasteland or dark depths. I'm casting Life and Loam. Sure, there's a point in the game where the extra mana would be helpful so that you could spin top and help yourself find dark depths, but Loam is essentially your top. You look at the top three cards of your library, put them in the graveyard, and determine if any of them are useful, and if they are, you draw them with your Loam.
You just get to have them. You don't have to choose.
But like, if you wanted a spell, you could draw Crop Rotation and then like tap top and dredge away the other two lands and then put top on top. But like, it, you don't have to, because you just dredge all three away and Loam. Like, so there are decks where is the effect, look at the top three cards and rearrange them, useful? Draw a card because you're light on cards, but you need the answer on top of your deck, useful? Every deck would like that. But there are some decks where the design of the deck doesn't allow for the extra mana or the activations, or wants to try and beat that card. So because of that, it doesn't fit into the strategy.
Okay, message received. I guess my point is that when something is an artifact like that, it's an easy target because it has potential to be so, like, ubiquitous. It has the potential to be such an easy go-to for so many decks. And as a result, it just becomes, like, an easy, like, spam for players. And,
but a lot of
strategies.
If you look at Legacy, it's not spammed.
I get you.
Your idea is reasonable, but in the design of Legacy and how decks piece together, the space that you're looking for that would fit into isn't there.
In terms of how WotC has handled bans in the past, though, like, that, to pinpoint one specific card from a deck that is really particular to a strategy, that's one way to do it, right? Like, we've just, like, cut out, like, a card that would, like, makes a deck strategy and nothing
that
else.
That would be Terminus.
Okay. Is that true, though? Like, Terminus is not played in any other deck strategy because it's only good in the Miracles.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So that would be the choice. I would agree with you.
To leave counterbalance intact for people that want to try and use that as a way to fight these combo decks. But by banning top, you've banned all these cards, which is unreasonable. And I'm of the opinion that if you're going to ban cards in Legacy, you needed to ban one of the following three cards: Deathrite Shaman, Leovold, True New Gnosis. Because now all of your blue decks are going to kind of converge into that. Like, you can't find me a reason why I would play a fair blue deck and not be casting two or more of those three cards. Mm. Like, there's no fair blue deck that exists right now that would be that way. Like, you could call Tezzerator a fair blue deck, but it's not very good.
So Leovold's going to be like $150, is that what you're telling me?
Go up from 50 to like 75 or 100. But like Deathrite Shaman, I think, is the best fair card right now. And so because Deathrite Shaman is the best fair card, you're locked into black and probably green as a splash. So you're incentivized to play a powerful 3-drop because you can accelerate with it. So why not play the blue, black, green 3-drop in Leovold, or the best blue attacker in True Gnosis? So I think a card from Miracles to hurt that deck needed to be banned, and then also two of those mistakes to make, you know, to make the deck spread out in how different the blue decks can be. Because then you have Stoneblade decks, but not all of them are playing True Gnosis, and they can't expand the mana base without Deathrite Shaman to play Leovold. So your white XX, white blue X Stoneblade decks are going to have cards that are unique to them now. And, you know, if you play junk or white black X, you know, your junk Stoneblade is going to have unique cards to Grixis, to Jeskai, which is going to have unique cards to Esper. And so all of them are going to see, like, maybe cards will be the centers of strategies like Stoneforge Mystic, but then you'll start to see the cards around them become less generic. And, like, and more kind of, you'll see a broader swath of cards. But, you know, they I don't think they pinpointed that as a thing they wanted to do with Legacy, so they didn't. Not a big deal.
All right, I have not much to throw into the other ban announcement, but do you want to just mention what else happened in terms of bans for 75 card constructed formats?
Yeah, vintage, not bans, but restrictions.
Restrictions.
Yeah. So Gush is restricted. Gataxian Probe is restricted. So for those of you on the cast who don't know what either of these cards are, I'm sure you know what Gataxian Probe is. Gush is that you may return two islands you control to their owner's hand instead of paying its mana cost. Draw two cards. I'm not even going to name its converted mana cost because nobody ever cast it for that. So basically what you'll see is, you know, Monastery Mentor sort of became the figure. I'll read the announcement, and then I'll kind of explain the gameplay. In Vintage, the metagame has come to a bit of a standstill as Monastery Mentor decks face down their main predator, Workshop decks. The primary issue seems to revolve around the prevalence of free draw spells for the Mentor deck that let it churn through its library for no mana while creating an abundance of tokens. We believe that by removing these free draw spells and the perfect information that comes from Gataxian Probe, we will significantly weaken Monastery Mentor-based strategies. Hopefully, the move away from free spells in the Mentor decks will lessen the impact of the Workshop's various Sphere of Resistance deck effects, opening up the metagame. And they're talking about In Legacy is the only format where Gataxian Probe hasn't been touched. They're looking at Death Shadow in Modern because of technology like Condemn. They think it's safe. And then they're waiting to ban something in Standard, whether it be Feldar Guardian, Harbor Currency, Rye, whatever they ban there. But Vintage. So Vintage has sort of been like these Gush shells, which is like Gush, blue non-basics like Tundra, Underground Sea, Volcanic Island, whatever three colors you decide to play. Gataxian Probe, Monastery Mentor. So a lot of times you'll see turns like turn 3 or turn 2 or turn 1 if you get a good hand. Play a Monastery Mentor, Gataxian Probe, you make a monk, pick up my islands, cast Gush, make a monk, draw 3 cards, cast Treasure Cruise because I've got a bunch of fetch lands and spells, you know, draw 3 more cards, or cast Ancestral Recall, draw some cards, you know, float mana off my islands. And you'll just, all of a sudden your opponent will go from no board to like casting all their Moxen and stuff and having 9 monk tokens. And as a workshop deck, you're just like, I can't do anything. Like, they make 9 monk tokens and you're just dead as a workshop player. Or you're dead as pretty much any player, unless you have, like, a Toxic Deluge or a Sulfur Elemental or something, or a Sudden Shock in response to their first spell. You know, something like that. You just don't have an answer in a mentor, you're just instantly dead. Sometimes you get to untap and maybe try and kill the mentor, but if your opponent untaps the mentor, you're dead. So... And it doesn't really matter what two colors you pair with blue and white or what one color you pair with blue and white. That's just kind of be where it is. And it's gotten so ubiquitous that people will play Gataxian Probe with Gush, with Paradoxical Outcome, just to just blow people out of the water with it. And just like, I'm going to make 15 monks and cast Time Walk and you're dead. So that's kind of a huge problem. So they're saying it will weaken Monastery Mentor to ban these free draw spells, and I agree with that. And they're saying hopefully the move away from these free spells will lessen the impact of workshop decks on the metagame. And the fact of the matter is that's not correct. That actually makes workshops stronger. Because now if you have this metagame where there's less free draw engine, there's less free spells being cast, you know, a lot of your keeps change because like you could have like double Gataxian Probe, no land, and like a pearl. And be like, yeah, all right, I'll try it. And like, if your opponent plays a sphere effect, you're one land away from like land pearl, Plague Gataxian Probe, pass, and like kind of being in the game. Whereas like, if you move away from free support draw spells and you have like preordains and you know, or whatever in peaks in those slots or whatever, however you decide to fill them, now your sphere resistances do more because now it's, well, my opponent has to get to 2 mana to cast their draw spells, or 3 mana, or 5 mana, and it's just like, that is super hard to do, so people have to play a couple more lands and power out their artifacts with their lands. So once you get lands and your artifacts working together to make mana, then you can sort of beat these sphere resistance effects and make them sort of irrelevant. It's just a lot harder to chain draw through your deck. You're going to see a lot more decks, I think, playing Time Twister and Wheel of Fortune. I think you're going to move back to more of those combo-based decks where the sphere resistance effects are still very powerful. But, like, I don't think you're going to see a lot of 1Z, 2Z draw spells anymore, like Preordain. Like, you'll see Preordain and Brainstorm and Ponder, but you're not going to see, like, trying to chain one-drop cantrips into, like, a Monastery Mentor kill. I think you're going to see a lot more, like, Wheel of Fortune or get Paradoxical Outcome style kills in. Mm-hmm. I think this is pretty good for Dredge, because the Forceful decks will still exist, but it's a lot harder for them to kill fast, because now they don't have, like, early mentor, couple of draw spells, have a Force of Will, and prevent you from killing them. Now they're, like, they're a little slower. So I think that's pretty good for Dredge. It's decent for shops. I'd be interested to see kind of how the metagame starts to expand from here.
Exciting.
There were some bans for EDH too.
Oh yeah, let's talk about those. I forgot about that.
It's only about our 100 card competitor brethren here. Banned in EDH, Leovold, Emissary of Trist. Unbanned, Protean Hawk.
Yeah, I didn't even realize Protean Hawk was still banned in EDH, and that was because there's a combo with that card. But
there's apparently a gazillion combos with that card.
We've apparently decided that there are just so many other combos that it just so much doesn't matter that there's a combo with that card.
Well, there's so many combos with that card that it fits in. Like, basically, if you're playing a green-black strategy, you now have instant access to an infinite combo. Because it's six power of creatures. Yeah. So you can put together the Mike and Trike combo, which is Mike, Mikaelis, Hollowed, and Triskelion. You can put that together by sacrificing Protean Hawk. So, like, you can put together the Mike and Trike combo. If you're in three colors, you can put together, like, kill Protean Hulk, and you can get a sac outlet and a Karmic Guide, putting Protean Hulk into play, sac Protean Hulk, and you can go get, Revelark is four power, and then a Blood Artist, and then Safi Erictator, and you just have the Safi combo. So, like, Protean Hulk is an instant Safi combo. So, all of your creature combos are just there now and available. So, if you're playing blue and a sac outlet, you just have, like, sac Protean Hulk. You can go get Body Double, make a Protean Hulk, sac Protean Hulk, go get Revelark and, like, a Mog Fanatic or whatever, and sac Revelark, sac Mog Fanatic, get a Body Double, make a Revelark, and you can just keep doing that and make infinite Mog Fanatics or whatever, Blood Artists, whatever your poison is, and mm-hmm. kill your opponent that. So, I mean, like, there's a bunch of combos now available, and sometimes you just sack Protean Hulk for value, and you just get, like maybe a god, if your god is not, like, you can get Rois, is that his name, the new green one?
Yeah, Ronus.
Ronus, you can get the white one. So, like, there's just, like, you can just do value Protean Hulks if you don't have a combo in your deck.
So why is this unbanned then?
There's no good reason. There's no world where it's good. Where it's a positive impact on EDH, I don't think. Because now people are just going to put it. So, like, now instead of playing Boonweaver Giant, so, like, I was playing Boonweaver Giant in my Carador deck, and I had to play Pattern Rebirth. So, that way that combo worked is Boonweaver Giant searches your deck for an aura and puts it into play attached to it. And so you basically get to the Safi combo by having Boonweaver Giant, by casting Boonweaver Giant, having it resolve. It's a 7 mana, 6 and a white. So, like, instead of that, I can have a 6 and a 5 green creature that I can green Sunzenith for to combine with my sac outlet to do the same combo and open up a slot in my deck.
Fun.
Yeah. Pretty fair balance deck.
Oh, man. I mean, it might as well exist, right? Because we already have, like, okay, so we have Tooth and Nail. You know, like, there's just so many things you can do in EDH that are just, like, one card can lead to infinite combo.
Might as well
have this one more thing.
And to be honest, you need two cards because you need a way to kill it. If you can't kill it or it gets sourced plowshares, like, it doesn't do anything. But, like, if you have a sac outlet, it's an infinite combo in a can.
Yeah.
And then, hooray, Leovold banning, because Leovold is kind of dumb.
Yeah, and the point you brought up to me it was Leovold as your general plus Teferi's Puzzle Box says your opponents can't draw cards for the rest of the game. I've never experienced that playing against that, but that sounds like something I would be disappointed in.
So no one has done it in our commander playgroup, and we have some pretty cutthroat people, but, like, there are people that run Notion Thief and Teferi's Puzzle Box and just, like, dumb stuff like that. It's like every blue card that says, like, shuffle your hand in your library and draw cards, or, like, Windfall or Time Twister or Time Spiral or Wheel of Fortune, you know, all those Wheel of Fortune effects. Basically, if you put a Leovold in the play and anyone has those cards in their deck, they just lose.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, I know. They're fun.
And then it's like, if you want to kill my lands because I have Cabal Coffers and Urborg, I get to draw a card. Or if you want to kill my Leovold, I get to draw a card. Like, so it's just like annoying incremental card advantage. Oh, you want to hit me with a big burn spell or something like that? You made like a 20 mana X spell that's not exsanguinate. All right, I'll draw a card and try and counter it. You know, so there's like, it's a lot of just, it's annoying incremental advantage staked to this super oppressive stacks engine of just like, if you can make people draw extra cards, they don't do it. So you get to play like Geiger Reach Sanctuarium and like make all of your opponents discard a card and you get to draw a card and discard a card. You know, or if you can, oh, you can't play Dak Faden in the deck. Because I say if you combine it with Dak Faden, you get to make your opponent discard two cards.
Yeah, you like, can't do that.
Yeah. I was like, oh, God, Dak Faden. But yeah, you can't do that. But like, you see the point. There are just really annoying cards that are reasonable cards to play in EDH that when you combine them with Leovold, just make people want to jump out the window. So. Yeah.
All right. Well, while we're on the topic of Commander, I have a question related to Commander here. We've got a couple of new like gold creatures in Amonkhet. There's one, Sommet Voice of Descent. It's 3 red green, but it has a white activation cost.
He is Naya. He is a Naya.
He is Naya. Okay, he is. Okay.
Yeah, his activation cost is a part of his color identity, so it's a Naya deck.
Okay. Now, I think I heard something that was a typo or a misprint or something, that white symbol was not supposed to be part of the card.
Well, it is.
It is now.
Well, it is. So.
Maybe that was a joke. I don't know. But yeah. But it certainly seems out of place in there. But
it's an interesting card. I mean, it makes sense. Like, white has the ability to do that kind of thing, so it makes sense.
It does. But so does green, though. It would make sense.
I mean, it's fair. I totally forgot that green could do that, too. So.
All right, well, I wanted to talk about one more thing before we close out today, and that is something pseudo-magic related. But a friend of mine works for and does like basically the cons for Direwolf Studios, which is the studio that has Eternal Card Game, which is the online card game basically created by Patrick Chapin, and I think LSV is Scott Vargas involved in that? I don't know.
Yeah, he is.
Anyways, this is like a Magic clone. It's like, if you know how to play Magic, you can pick this game up in like 30 seconds and learn how to play it.
Yeah.
In fact, a lot of the mechanics are exactly Magic mechanics with different names. Some of them are almost exactly the same with very slight differences. So basically, this is coming from Magic players who have like taken the game and they have said, like, let's just improve on a game that already like is great, right? So you play with subtle differences. One difference, and I don't understand why they've made this difference, but you play with a 75-card deck instead of a 60-card deck. Okay. Instead of mana, you have influence. And so instead of playing a land, you play a power card, which is basically a land card. You actually do have to have a card in your deck that represents a power card.
Right, influence, yeah.
But when you play a power card, I should say, you get an influence that's like green. It's one of the 5 colors that they have, just like in Magic.
Sure.
And it represents, next to the amount of influence you have, the amount of colors in that influence you have. So if you have 3 total influence, and they're represented by, like, 1 green, 1 blue, and 1 red, on your turn, you can play 3 cards that cost 1 red. Does that make sense?
Hell.
If you have 1 red influence, you can play 3 cards that cost 1.
Yeah, it's kind of like clan style. Like, if you are a part of the red influence, all of your influence can be red.
Yeah, so that helps like the mana screw a lot, but the 75 cards doesn't, and you get mana screwed quite a bit in this one. This like mana screw hurts quite a bit because you like end up like top decking lands a lot, or you like top deck non lands a lot, and things are like kind of tough. But the other thing that they did that makes this a lot better is like dual lands are like super accessible. Like they clearly came into this thinking like, wow, we've seen these experiences where like players like have limited access to like the mana fixing that they need to play like balanced decks. So dual lands are basically like commons in this game, like all the lands you need for the mana fixing, and they basically have the equivalents of like fast lands, check lands, and then like the
original dual lands.
No, they don't have the original dual lands.
Okay.
They have ones that like say like when you play them, you have to like have a sigil in your hand or a power card in your hand, basically.
Oh, it's kind of like secluded land.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you have to meet the requirement of having a fairy one.
Yeah. No, they're kind of like the ones from the new set where you have to have like a forest or a mountain.
Oh, okay. Those lands. Okay, like Port Town.
Yes. And then let's see, what else? And like I said, some of the mechanics are basically like Magic. So like Quick Draw, for example, is like First Strike, but the only difference is it only works when you're attacking. It doesn't work when you're blocking. Oh. So some things like that make it easy for like you know, like the transition, but then also make it difficult.
I think it's kind of good. Yeah, I think it's kind of good though. Like, you know, that you can only have first strike when you're attacking makes blocking much harder. So it promotes, if some abilities sound like they promote offense and some of them promote defense.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. And then each color has its identity, just like magic does. Like, so red is like a color that burns spells. Like, blue has like reactive spells. There are fast spells, which are the, like instants. You know, like blue plays a lot of instants. And then, what was I going to say? So similar to Hearthstone, because it's an online game, there are a lot of things that you can do with the game that you can't do in paper. So
like some random effects?
Not random. This game doesn't have many random effects like Hearthstone does. So if that's kind of like a turnoff to you with Hearthstone, there's like almost none of that in this game. In fact, I don't think there is any. There is an effect called like Warcry, for example, which means that when a creature attacks, the top unit in your deck gets +1/+1 to its attributes. And that's permanently. So like when you draw it, you see them affected on the card. When that creature dies, it keeps those effects. And so you can return it to your hand and the effects are on there. So it's not like a +1/+1 counter that removes when the creature dies or goes back to your hand.
So it's not like if you've seen the recent set of Hearthstone, they have like there's been a deck that's like called Hand Buff that creatures will add power and toughness to creatures that are in your hand, but when they get bounced, the buffs go away.
Oh, no, it's not like that. All those effects stay for the remainder of the game, which is kind of cool.
That's cool. Okay, yeah, because, like, hand buff was kind of confusing to me when I first played against it because I thought, like, or played with it, because I thought my minions would stay buffed if they got bounced by different stuff. So, like, I just played Acolyte of Pains that were buffed a couple times into my opponent's, like, board when I knew they had bounce spells in their deck. And my Acolyte of Pain got bounced, and it became a 1-3 again. I was like, oh, this is very unsatisfying.
Yeah. I started to try to download Hearthstone again after playing this game because the interface is very similar. It looks a lot like it, but this game is actually closer to Magic in the way that it plays out.
Yeah.
But I was reading some reviews, and people are like saying that Hearthstone is kind of tanking right now as far as like the meta goes with the new sets. Is it really bad, or, you know?
So I haven't played Hearthstone since the new set came out. But I've like been watching videos of Hearthstone, and they've created legendary spells called quests, where you like do a certain thing over the course of the game, and you complete a quest and you get like a super powerful card. And there's like three quests that are just super stupid that like I think are going to ruin the game as long as they exist. One of them is play 7 taunt minions in Warrior, and it gives you a 4/2 weapon. That when it comes into play, it makes your hero power Ragnaros' ability, like deal 8 to a random thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So this is like totally unbalanced.
Yeah, so you become Ragnaros, and then there's one for Mage where you play like 6 spells that don't start in your deck, and if you do that, you get a literal time warp, take an extra turn.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, man, the third one
is Rogue. Well, none of these are the random one for Sulphurous is like good
the
because if you could
thing is random the 8 damage.
Well, but if you could point the Ragnaros thing wherever you wanted, it'd be busted as hell.
Well, I know, but they're saying that's a drawback, but it could
be the perfect
target is what I'm saying. Yeah. So it's hard to balance.
So like random being the perfect target versus always hitting the perfect target. The randomness gives the game a little something,
play. I get that. But the fact that they think that they can put 8 damage for 2 mana, you know, because it's a drawback, that's what I'm saying. Like, that
No. No, it's not intended. It's not intended to be a drawback. It's intended to be like, when you complete this quest, you just get a super powerful thing. And so Warrior's super powerful thing was to become Ragnaros. And then, like, the Rogue quest is the other one that's broken. It's like, play a minion of a certain name 4 times, and you get a quest called quest completion spell called Crystal Core, where all of your minions for the rest of the game are 5/5s.
Oh my god. Alright,
yeah,
so
you
like,
play against those. So those 3 quests are like super busted, and the rest of them are like bad. And so like you have whole decks built around doing that, and then like you have like a priest deck that's just like Elise the Trailblazer, which is like the new Elise, which shuffles an unopened pack into your deck. Like you don't get to keep
overboard, man.
Yeah. You don't get to keep the cards, but it just shuffles an unopened pack in your deck. But here's where it gets
like
weird. Yeah, and here's where it gets even weirder. The pack is a spell, and Priest has a spell that says discover a spell in your deck. So you can discover a pack of 5 cards. So you can cast a 2-mana spell, discover a draw 5 cards for 2-mana spell, play that, open a pack, find another one of the discover spell, and discover a spell and then discover another Angoro pack. So you could, like, go infinite, or there's just, like, you could just open any of the busted legendaries, like, out of Angoro. And just, like, I watched Brian Kibler open an Angoro pack, open it, like, he played the discover spell, found an Angoro pack, opened the Angoro pack, got, like, two good cards, a busted legendary, and Elise, played Elise and put another Angoro pack in his deck. And I'm just like, how do you lose? You had, like, 15 extra cards and a busted legendary. Like, there's no way you can lose this game. So that's kind of bad. And so it's just kind of like there's a lot of awkward stuff going on right now. Yeah. And I don't know if I'm going to pick up more Hearthstone and, like, get into the new meta. Just because, like, Quest Warrior is so bad. Because, like, so the quest is just dumb. But then there's, like, a 3-mana, 1-3, 1-4 neutral minion that discovers a taunt minion.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's just like, oh, this card is so dumb to play against. Like, you're just incentivized to put it in, like, whatever class. But, like, you put two of it in Taunt Warrior, and it's just like, oh, God, this is horrible.
Okay, so here's what you do. You get Eternal. All right, so here's where I brought this up, because this game is sweet. And
Sorry, you made me go on a Hearthstone rant, yeah, where I like watching it, but I don't want to play.
You're on a tangent slash rant, and that's all not right. The point I'm trying to make here. I'm trying to make this point where Hearthstone blazed some trails, right? So it did a lot of great things for, like, you know, making a really great user interface. It had a good thing going for it for a long time. I think it can probably fix a lot of things. You know, it's got a lot of people that are playing it. But Eternal is a small company, so it's got a few, like, minor tech glitches and stuff every once in a while. But they sort them out pretty quickly. But as far as, like, something that you can pick up, you can learn to play, and you can enjoy playing, like, really fast. Like, you can connect to a game in, like, 25 seconds, which is amazing to me because the amount of players that play this are much smaller than MTGO. Yet you can go and you can draft, and you can play a draft game in 15 seconds. So it's possible, right? Like, there have got to be more people drafting Moto. I don't know. Maybe not, but it happens. You can download this game in, like, 5-10 minutes. It's free. And you play it, and literally you can learn the game in another 5 minutes. And so it's super simple. Magic has a lot to take from this. It's got a lot to learn from this. And so I hope that in the whole process of, like, discovering what Magic Digital Next is going to be, they're looking at things like this, where these companies are doing things right. And these are, like, actually players. Like, this is the best way to, like, draw feedback from players. Like, these are players that, like, are playing the game for years and years and years, and they're like, we can do it better. We're going to make our own game. Like, goddamn, like, Wizards, like, go look at this stuff and think, and figure out what works for them and take it to your own company, because there's stuff that's working really well for them that you are just totally oblivious to in Moto. One of the biggest things, and I don't think that Wizards could ever pull this off online, is the fact that you can craft cards, and this is the case with Hearthstone too. It's easy to have access to anything that you need for your competitive deck, because you can craft cards where every card, based on its rarity, is a set price. Where you don't have to worry about the market being, like, just all out of whack. And maybe that's what draws some people to Magic, is that, you know, there's, like, some, like, they're, like, it feels like you're trading the stock market sometimes, you know?
Yeah, not interested in that, but sure.
You're not interested in having set prices for the cards based on
the stock market. The stock market. Oh, I'm very interested in set prices.
Okay, yeah, but so for example, like, okay, there are mythics in the game that cost, like, 3,200, basically dust, like, if you're familiar with Hearthstone, which is a lot. Like, it takes a long time to get up to those mythics, so it feels really good when you're able to craft one. But the good news is you can craft them. You can get them. Like, it's not, like, totally unobtainable to get, like, a playset of Lilianas, you know? Like, you like, can dust, like, your cards you don't want and get the cards that you do want within an amount of time and with the certain amount of effort. You are incentivized to pay money into the game to do that, because you want to get there faster, because you want to draft to get the packs opened, you want to draft to get the packs and get the cards that you're going to dust to get there. You know, it's not like the people that are thinking, well, I'll eventually just, you know, get all the free events and I don't have to pay any money in this game. No, people pay money for Hearthstone. Hearthstone profits plenty, right?
Oh yeah, Hearthstone is very profitable.
It's certainly a platform that works just fine for them. I don't see why Magic has to rely so heavily on, like, having this system where the secondary market is so heavily involved in that process. You know, there doesn't need to be a middleman. That's what I think.
I agree.
How we get to that point? That's a very, very fragile situation.
Oh yeah, very much so.
I don't know. But it's exciting. I'm not here to plug this game, though that's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's just a game. It's just a game you've been playing and you think it's, like, pretty sweet. Like, this podcast is, like, we talk about Magic, but, like, we definitely devote some time to just talking about, like, sweet stuff that we do that we like. So, I mean, I don't see why that's a problem, but.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways, that's all I got for this week. You got anything else, Daryl?
No, man. Drink beer. It's great.
I'm going to the brewer game tonight, so.
That's exactly what I'm drink lots of beer.
I will probably have to. They're doing okay, though. They're 9-11 right now. They're not the Baltimore Orioles, though. You guys
got a team out there. Baltimore Orioles are doing all right now. They just took 2 of 3 from the Red Sox.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You know who has more home runs than the Red Sox, though?
Who?
Our first baseman.
That's hilarious!
Yeah.
That's glorious.
I don't know if that's still the case.
It probably isn't. Really, I don't think he's got more home runs than the whole team still. Like,
he did 3 games ago. Eric Thames, he was playing in the Korean leagues for 3-4 years.
Yeah.
And now he's come back. He was putting up like video game numbers in the Korean leagues, and now we brought him back on. Basically, got a steal for him. And signed him to a contract in the majors for the first time in quite a while, and he's killing it. He's crushing it, man.
He's getting his money's worth.
Yeah, he's making a statement, that's for sure. Yeah. So that's exciting. That's awesome. Stuff.
Awesome, man.
Anyways, I will talk to you next week.
Yeah, dude, take it easy.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye.
Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com. Or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.